Welcome to the Poem of the Week. Each week, our poems are intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes and Essential Evidence Senior Editor Dr. Mark A. Bell. Gentlemen.
Hello, Mark. How are you doing?
Hey, Mike. Good to talk to you.
We haven't talked about your biking in a while. You doing much biking this summer?
Absolutely. It's been beautiful up here, and I've been using this program called MapMyRide.com, so a little free plug for them. It's, if you're a cyclist, there's also MapMyWalk or MapMyHike, and you can go online and find good rides in your area, and you can track your rides and stuff. So I've been having fun creating some rides around Onekama, Michigan on the site.
Wow. So, we have to be careful here. Not only do you need to be a bike rider, but you also need to have an Apple iPod, right?
No, you can use your you can use it on your laptop, but you can also use they have an iPhone app, of course. But so you don't have to have the iPhone though.
Oh, good. Okay, I know that you're a big Mac Apple guy. So.
Yeah, you know what? I'm an iPhone guy, and I just bought my first Mac ever. A couple of months ago to start working on some iPhone apps. But, I've never been one of those.
Excellent.
They do great stuff.
So today we're going to talk about an interesting drug with a very interesting twist on it. But let's start with the poem.
Mm-hmm.
The poem actually asks the clinical question, is low-dose colchicine as effective as high-dose colchicine? Just a wee bit of background. Colchicine has been used for years, and when I say years, I mean years. It goes back to 3,000 years in the Greek period when we can document that it was used. Despite that, the evidence for oral colchicine and its dosing has been limited. There aren't great trials. I think most of us use colchicine right now as a second-line drug if NSAIDs are not tolerated. The aim of this trial was to look at and to try to determine what dose of colchicine was best. And it turns out that there's some politics to this. But first, what did the authors of this study that was published in Arthritis and Rheumatology find?
Well, they took patients with a history of gout and randomized them to low-dose colchicine, high-dose, or placebo. Now, high-dose was the traditional dosing, which is 1.2 milligrams followed by 0.6 milligrams every hour for 6 hours. Low dose gave the same initial dose of 1.2 milligrams, then gave 0.6 milligrams an hour later, and then nothing. They just gave placebo for the next 5 hours. Placebo patients got only placebos for their attack. So patients were allowed to use rescue medications like NSAIDs. And when somebody had an acute gout, what they did was they called the gout flare call center. I imagine a klaxon going off in the background somewhere, that used a script to confirm that it really was an attack. And then they made sure that the treatment was started within 12 hours. And then they used this call center to evaluate how well the treatment worked. And the patients also had diaries to track their pain and symptoms and adverse effects and use of rescue medicines. The main outcome was at least a 50% reduction in pain in the 24 hours after they started treatment. And they enrolled 575 patients, but only 185 actually had an acute attack during the study period. Now, of those 185 patients, 38% taking low-dose colchicine responded, 33% taking high-dose colchicine, and only 15% taking placebo. So the number needed to treat was 5 for low-dose colchicine, 6 for high-dose compared to placebo. Rescue medicine was used by a slightly fewer in the low-dose group, 31% compared to 35% in the high-dose and 50% in the placebo group. No adverse effects, no serious adverse events, but in terms of tolerability, the low-dose colchicine was a lot better tolerated. 77% in the high-dose group had adverse events of any kind compared to 36%, or about half, in the low-dose group, and that was pretty close to the placebo rate. None of the adverse events in the low-dose group were severe, whereas 19% in the high-dose group had mostly severe diarrhea. So in this study, low-dose colchicine was just as effective and maybe a bit more effective and was much better tolerated than the high-dose colchicine.
Okay, so, you know, normally that would be the end of the poem, and I would thank you, and we would talk
a little bit more about it.
It's
a no-brainer. It really seems like kind of a no-brainer to me.
Absolutely, and I would talk about biking, and we would say, I'll talk to you next week. But let me give you a little bit of backstory. First of all, I don't know if you paid attention, Mark, to the disclaimers here, but the lead author here was a guy named Turkel Taub, who lists 35 pharmaceutical companies that he has received funding from. It's really one of the most remarkable lists I've ever seen. But hidden in there is a little company that most of the listeners probably haven't heard of called URL Pharma. His co-author, a guy named Davis, also owns far fewer stocks, but he owns URL Pharma. Nothing remarkable about that until you recognize that as a result of this one trial, a company called URL Pharmaceutical applied to the FDA for a patent on a drug called Colcryz, C-O-L-C-R-Y-S. Colcryz is low-dose colchicine. The FDA gives URL Pharma a go-ahead to market the drug in low-dose fashion. They give them a 3-year exclusive. So the cost of colchicine, 9 cents a pill on drugstore.com, goes to $4.85 per pill. Then they apply through the Orphan Drug Act and receive 7 years of additional patent protection for URL because they say that it can also be used in the treatment of familial Mediterranean fever. So now they've got a 10-year exclusive on it. It's selling for $4.85 a pill. What does that mean? In 2007, Medicaid filled 100,000 prescriptions for colchicine. It cost Medicaid, which is the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, $1 million. With the new brand name, it cost $50 million for the same 100,000 prescriptions. Again, it calls into question this no-brainer, why not give this as a low dose? Well, that's great, except these guys just made hundreds of millions of dollars, and we can't use it anymore for our patients who can't afford NSAIDs and want to go on something else.
So it's not available as a generic anymore?
If readers think they want to know more about this, there's an article that outlines exactly the story I've told you in the New England Journal of Medicine, the April 14th edition, written by Castleheim and Solomon.
That is amazing.
Amazing story.
Yeah.
Anyway, so while we encourage you to use low dose instead of high dose, you know, you're going to have to find your wealthy patients.
But you're right. That is absolutely unconscionable. And, you know, somebody ought to remind him of his Hippocratic Oath, I guess. Well, thanks for that that insight, Mike. That was great.
We'll talk with you next week.
All right. See you then.
That's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to read this and other recent poems, please go to www.essentialevidence.com. Please join us again next week for another medical poem.